Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the ISP Task Force. Well, we will continue our discussion on draft recommendations to date. Just do a quick roll call of the members. We have Ken Kawamoto, Stephen Lane, Anil Jain, Cynthia Fisher, David McCauley, Edward Jun, Ram Shriram, Tamer Fakhouri. Are there any other task force members that are on the phone?
Ricky Bloomfield.
Hello. Anyone else?
Good morning.
Okay, with that, I'll turn it over to our co-chairs to get us started.
Excellent. Thank you guys so much, and thank you everyone for showing up this morning. As Lauren mentioned, we are going to be working through the rest of our medication and pharmacy data recommendations and trying to clarify and gain input into those. The ONC team has already begun an initial draft of our final report, and we've been working with them to sort of put some structure together and start to figure out how we're going to incorporate the recommendations that we have settled on to date. We're thinking that today is probably, if we're successful, the last day that our focus will be on the recommendations themselves. But of course, as we put them together into report form, I think inevitably there will be discussion about, you know, just what we meant, et cetera. But I think at this point, we're no longer going to be bringing in subject matter experts or diving into new domains, though there may be some sort of specific observations and recommendations that pop up as we go along. Ken, do you want to add to that?
I think that sounds good. We're really trying to go into the report writing mode soon.
And then as part of that, we wanted to talk about the schedule for the remainder of our time together. I think we can kind of go through our initial slides here. And here is the proposed schedule. So we met on the 23rd. We're meeting today, and then we've got another meeting scheduled later this month. Two full task force meetings in September, and then one in the beginning of October, before we make final recommendations to the HITECH. There is going to be a HITECH meeting next month in September where we will have some opportunity to present some draft recommendations. I don't think we've really dug down very deeply yet into the medication pharmacy data recommendations. I don't think we've really determined what we're going to be focusing on in the September 17 in-person meeting. But clearly our final report will need to be done by mid-October and delivered. Any questions from folks about the schedule, or anyone have any concerns about that? Great. Well, again, thank you all for coming. And I think, Ken, do you want to walk us through the med priorities, and I'll try to take notes as we go?
Yeah, that's great. If we can go to the spreadsheet. And we were just discussing where we left off. I thought it was after the cost information. I don't remember if we went through the non-cost priority one recommendations, but we can just briefly go over them. So the first one you see there is on having alternative therapies, so not just cost on what you're about to prescribe but or wanting to prescribe, but what other options are there, and information around there. And just as a note, I think it was David, who had commented we should take a lot of our related recommendations around things like price transparency and prior authorization, and try to merge a lot of the related recommendations. We did attempt to do it in the Google spreadsheet format, but realized it just becomes unwieldy because just the nature of the way spreadsheets work. So our plan is to merge them together at the point of converting these to our report format. And as a part of that, too, we are drafting, I think another person recommended coming up with stories to sort of put these recommendations into perspective in a kind of a use case personal format. So we've started to draft some of those up for medications and others, and we'll plan to incorporate those for feedback as well. Okay, so if you have any comments on these, let us know. Otherwise, we'll go fairly quickly through these remaining priority one ones. The other one was around row 12, around electronic prescriptions of controlled substances, that that's still fairly limited, needs to be increased. I do see in content 1A, the content of the original prescribing event is not defined. I don't remember who or when we added this, but perhaps we could get a little bit clarification on it. At least for me, it was a little bit unclear what we were referring to here.
I think Terry added this, and he is not with us this morning. But I think it had really had to do with provenance and the point that when you receive, say, a prescription on the med list from another organization, that you really don't know where that came from. How did they get it? Was that a med that they prescribed? Was it a med that they heard about from the patient, that they imported from SureScripts or from another provider or from a claim, for example? It's not clear where what the source of that original prescribing event was.
But I agree, this is kind of confusing, because if it's the original prescribing event, there isn't an ambiguity. And I think we should require people that want to put new stuff in to be really much crisper than this. This will lead to nothing but confusion. And we already have...
Well, but... I mean,
we already
problem is
have provenance in other parts.
But it's not transmitted reliably, Clem, I don't think. I think med reconciliation is difficult in part because it's difficult to know where the medication originated from if you wanted to track it back to the source.
Well, maybe it's just semantics, but what we want to know is what the item you have in your record came from. If it really is the original, it's what you wanted to know, where it really came from. So I may be talking semantics, but regardless, I don't think this is actionable the way it is.
Well, and I don't think it's just semantics. I think that it's one thing to say who started, I'm on an antihypertensive. It was originally prescribed 6 years ago by a PCP in a town where I no longer live. You know, since then, the dose was modified by a cardiologist, and then it was stopped, and then it was restarted at a different dose. I mean, are we really talking about the entire history of a given med? I don't think we are, because I think that would be unrealistic. You know, or as Terry said here, the original prescribing event, kind of who started it, when, and the details about that, as he said, patient, author, organization, timestamp, medication, dose, frequency, duration, indication, brand, that information from the original. I don't think any system is designed today to capture and maintain that as metadata to a prescription. Is that something we're interested in promoting?
Well, I think it needs a lot more analysis.
I think this more relates to the notion of a care plan, like who is managing this medication, for example. We want to also avoid unnecessary burden going on it as well. I mean, I can just imagine if when you order a prescription, there's another checkbox that says, please don't modify it without my knowledge being there, that you have to check, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
No, and no one's asking for that. I think it's just a question of making sure that, particularly as information about prescriptions flows across system boundaries, that the receiving system has some way to determine where this original medication came from. simple handoff consistently.
I mean, but are we talking about the original, or simply the one that they're receiving? That's really the question. Are we really asking for a whole new category of metadata that should somehow stay with the prescription as it transmits across boundaries? I just don't think we're prepared for that.
Yeah, but I think you have the original substance, and you also have the original dose, or the original route, or would any of those be, you know, considered a new prescription or an old prescription? And then you have the concept of clinician responsible for managing, which can be incredibly ambiguous. For example, if prescriptions are written while inpatient for discharge, it could be written by a resident who's not going to see that patient ever again, yet the primary care physician might not agree with that prescription and doesn't want to be managing it. And so I think there's a lot of complexity built in here, as has been noted.
Here, here.
Yeah.
Well, the problem to be solved is that.
Well, this can get requested by someone who's not on the line, and we're speculating about what was meant and how to deal with this very complicated thing. I think it's a fool's errand right now.
Well, so Terry's not here to defend this. Should we sort of gray it out until we can discuss it with him?
Well, I mean, I think it's clear sort of what he meant, because he includes things like designation, whether medication can be modified by anyone other than the prescriber. But I think it's okay for us to sort of mold it to what we think while we're on as reasonable, and he can review it, because it's not like we're finalizing it now, right? Like, there's opportunity as these will all get molded as we go into recommendations.
Well, now that industry will push back too.
My suggestion is to focus this more on what should be persisted across exchange of information. I think this is a real issue, right? So when we get external data, a real issue we run into is that when we import it or reconcile it, like, it then just all the provenance gets removed. It's as if, for example, we say, you know, as of today, when we reconciled it, patient states they're on this medication because we reconciled it with them. It doesn't say, well, it came because it came from our, you know, neighboring health system's record.
If we have provenance and all the prescriptions, the receiving system can keep it and deal with it as they wish. I mean, the key here is having the provenance, and I think we've already asserted that we have that provenance.
Isn't that what's being asked for?
Yeah, that's exactly I'm asking for too.
Yeah. But it's
this is Terry. Hello.
This is beyond
Terry.
This is beyond provenance.
Hi. Sorry to interrupt.
No, Terry, please jump in. I think this is yours, and welcome.
Oh, hi. So I think really the question is provenance. And so what can we attach to the original prescribing event, as Ken says, that lets us know where it came from and where it's been?
I agree. And I mean, it's a separate issue of whether the EHR decides whether they want to show it or not, et cetera, but at least the data should be persisted. We're running into issues where after reconciliation, like, it's not even in the back end where we can see it and make use of it.
In terms of a recommendation, it seems that all we can recommend is that this be explored. I mean, I don't think we have time to sort of say of Terry's list of potential items to include which ones are most important, but really that this is an area that should be looked into.
Let me just say, we did this study with Surescripts, so we got all the prescriptions for the last 2 years, and we presented it in a flow sheet, and it was no problem with figuring out stuff. But we had it all, and it's there. Actually, Surescripts has it all, most of it anyway.
Yep. But it's not passed across interfaces like that, Clem. That's what's being asked for here.
I didn't hear what you said.
Well, I don't think that information is available across interfaces in typical settings today. You know, so
it's probably not just you have to pay for it. It's available as an H2 as a B2 HL7 prescription message.
asking SureScript to solve the problem is not
Well, I'm not proposing. I'm only pointing out that if we get all the data, you're not going to have a problem with any of this stuff. And I think it's that's what we should be getting.
Isn't that what we're asking for here?
Well, I don't know. I shouldn't be commenting.
This is Anil. I think this is at least the description that's written on the Excel sheet or the spreadsheet is more than just provenance. This is trying to get into the head of the prescriber and the person who changed the prescription and for what reasons they changed it, whether it was went from brand to generic. I think this is beyond a technical provenance, but more of a clinical sort of thread as to the decision-making about a prescription. So I do think this is beyond just simple provenance, at least the way I see this on the screen.
Yeah. I agree with that, but I think that's going to be a lot of work for a lot of clinicians.
And I think we also
it's a workflow issue when you start, but when you're making the original prescription, it's not a big deal to indicate that who you are, what you're doing, what you did. And I think the information that's often lacking and why medication lists are so terrible is that no one takes responsibility for managing the list, in part because they're not sure who's managing each individual med. So that one piece in there that says, you know, can I change this medication, or who's the only one to change it, or don't change this unless you're me, becomes really critical for people on very bad medicines that have a lot of bad clinical outcomes if they're not managed correctly. You can do that within an institution where there's agreement about it. I don't know how you do it across the world.
I think you make a standard. You make a standard list of what you expect from someone to write the prescription.
Yeah, so my suggestion is there's two separate issues, right? One issue is if there's information that is available and people are capturing, how do you make sure that that doesn't get lost during the reconciliation process or import process, which is, I think, distinctly an issue. And then there's also the issue of, you know, there's a lack of information currently captured that is important for clinical decision making. But that's I think that's a separate issue, and that's probably more like a US CDI to tackle issue, someone to propose, because, you know, it's something like, you know, right now in many systems, it's not required for you to actually specify why you're prescribing a particular medication, like to treat something or to prevent something. And if we say, for example, that's required, that's a fairly substantial change that would be need to, you know, we need to weigh, like, what does it mean? If it's not like voluntarily, for example, you could put it in if you want to, but you must put it in. I mean, maybe the benefit is worth the cost, but that's not something like I think we can just decide in 5 minutes here.
So I've added some language in the spreadsheet for people to consider, sort of trying to clarify this as an observation and some recommendations to consider this. And I guess the responsibility would really be to ONC.
Isn't our goal to suggest areas where we think additional work needs to be done? We're not supposed to solve the problem. We're supposed to prioritize areas where additional standards work is needed.
And I think that's fair. And I mean, I you know, we did put higher up, like, medication reconciliation as a problem, as a priority one. I think it might have been even our first priority. And I think it's reasonable to say this is a part of that issue, sort of an elaboration that part of the reason why it's very difficult to do reconciliation and to, you know, make sense of it is, you know, these two issues. The data from the source is not is sometimes just, like, not carried through, and maybe information that's later needed for reconciliation and making decisions on it is oftentimes never documented and hard to access.
So you have at least provenance, which is just a technical question, and then you have provider intent, which is a broader clinical question, amongst others. So those two could be called out. And lots of study been done on capturing provider intent. It was Gordy Schiff who did the large studies completed not too long ago. So I think if we were in the mode of still getting input, he would be a good person to solicit for what they learned about capturing clinical intent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and we have a separate item for reason for prescription, indication, associated diagnosis. We've already said that that's valuable. So those really are the two key pieces here. And this one just simply gets at maintaining that metadata and sending it with the medication information.
But be aware that for some drugs, it's obvious. You don't really need to say it.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's clear. And yet saying it does improve the completeness of the record. I mean, you may need to say it to the patient. Again, the providers, prescribing providers are not the only people who need this information. I think a lot of my patients don't necessarily know that the Tylenol is for their headache.
Well, actually, that's a good reason to put it into the prescription so it shows on the label.
Yep.
Yeah. It does bring up this other USCDI process, too, where it fits really nicely, right? Like, the questions become things like, what's the benefit of it, which includes, like, the patient actually knows why they're taking it. That might actually increase their compliance. You know, other doctors, polypharmacy could be reduced, you know, et cetera. And if there's places that are actually already doing this with different EHR systems, then that can be listed. It seems like the kind of thing that is natural use case for the separate USCDI process, which would adjudicate these kind of issues, I think.
Okay, so I invite everyone to look at the language as I've modified it and see if this is capturing the meat of our discussion.
Do you want to list intent, prescribing intent, in your
list that there? Indication? That's fine. I can add that in.
Indication or intent? I don't know. Indication is.
Are we talking about for two fields, indication and intent?
No, I'm Clem. I'm saying those are the same thing, but just intent is a stronger word.
Right. But indication might be better understood by the world. So I don't know.
There, I've just added some clarifying text. Just use a few words. Again, we're not going to solve this problem today. We're just saying someone should look into this, and it's probably the ONC.
Yeah, okay. I think these look good.
Does anybody feel that we need to return to the hand-raising feature? That was a little loose for our standard discussion.
Sounds good.
It was efficient, but I did want to make sure everyone felt that if they wanted to contribute, they had a chance to. So I can watch the hands, Ken, as you're leading the discussion.
Sounds good. I think we've sort of discussed this one fairly well, and unless anyone has objections as indicated by raising hand, let's move on. Okay, let's move on to the priority two ones. Let's see. So this is row 15. These get into kind of our secondary recommendations. So one is around PDMP data, the issue being that getting access to it can be cost prohibitive. We noted fees may be required in order to download data into EHRs, and data access is dependent on a lot of patchwork of state regulations. For example, some don't allow you to incorporate it into the data into your EHR. You can only view it with no ability to make use of it in the system. So recommendations we had, streamline PDMP regulations across states, e.g. via federal regulation or perhaps model state regulation. Provide US Core Fire Profiles IGs to support access to PDMP data at low cost directly through state PDMPs. And there's a ONC project on this currently called, I think, RxCheck. Explore making PDMP data available for third-party apps to download and transmit to support innovative services. And policy levers responsibility we had was ONCHHS Congress, state legislature, streamlining unified regulations in this area, and ONC and state PDMP providers continue support for enabling direct, low-cost, fire-based access to state PDMPs. Thoughts on this one?
You want hands or not?
Yes, let's do hands. But I think that means you want, well.
Yeah, okay, post hoc. I'm post hoc raising my hand. I think this is all good. The one word that's missing is privacy. At least in the states that have had big battles about this, it's being cast as a privacy issue. And I so this explore making the middle column third point available for third-party apps to download, that's a red flag for privacy concerns. You need to put some kind of qualifying language in there.
Yeah, so maybe services, comma, where privacy can be assured, or you know that kind of thing.
What about approved services? I mean, you know, public health has got to get it by law.
After this one, let's do hands. But yes, with appropriate privacy controls, or when the apps are, from authorized stakeholders such as designated public health organizations or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else on this Rule 15? And Stephen, I'm going to just go ahead and add that. With appropriate privacy controls or by designated.
Sorry, Ken, I was just thinking it actually belonged in the observation as opposed to the recommendation, but that's fine.
Okay. Authorized organization such as public health.
While we're pausing here, if any of you haven't seen the Washington Post series on the uses that the federal prescriptive narcotics database is being put to in terms of the opioid crisis, it's absolutely fascinating reading. And it's an amazing example of what data can do. And the fact that it was hidden away and took a year's worth of legal wrangling to get it exposed is a sad commentary.
Well, David, is good or bad? I didn't read it yet, but the bottom line.
Oh, it's... Well, it's good because it explains retrospectively what was the causes, or I'll say what was the early warning signs of this opioid crisis. A small number of pharmacies in most states have over 75% of opioid prescriptions. And the feds had all this data and just stuck it in a database and kept anybody from looking at it. And in retrospect, it was just seismic warnings of what was going on there in plain sight for 10 years. It's stunning reading. Read it.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Okay. Let's go on to the next one. So adverse drug events. So we have row 16. ADE detection is presently an emerging manual process. Due to liability concerns, healthcare organizations routinely document ADEs and related patient safety events in IT systems that are separated from EHR and other HIT systems. Work is underway by ARC to automate portions of the chart review process in an effort to identify and characterize potential ADEs. It would be beneficial to have a one-click adverse event reporting function wherein a clinician could click a button and it would snapshot the patient's current medication profile and pop up a question on what the adverse event was and communicate that to the FDA for subsequent analysis. Recommendations, explore the data standards implementation specs that would be required to further automate the ID documentation analysis and reporting of ADEs. Explore the technology and data requirements necessary to support AI/ML-enabled real-time utilization of population-based ADE data in conjunction with individual patient data to inform clinical care and population health management related to safe medication usage. Support coordination between ADE-related work being done by ARC, FDA, patient safety organizations, EHR vendors, pharma, and other stakeholders, and explore and encourage new approaches to address liability concerns on the part of provider organizations which limit the transparency of ADE vendors' data. So that's what's there. Bob, David?
I thought we had a discussion about putting this in the context of broader patient safety events. But I don't remember exactly what we landed on. It seems odd to carve out a specific subset of patient safety for recommendations.
I think it's just because this is our medication sort of topic, and that's I think that's
okay.
why. But
okay.
we could make a note that similar approaches should be identified for other types of safety events.
Well, in that context, maybe more around, you know, the barriers are typically going to be legal, liability and legal, and so you might as well deal with all of those in a consistent way. Reporting an adverse drug event versus some other adverse event is going to fall into the same legal frameworks, so it should be seen in the, as part of the broader safety focus.
And I think we want to say something about, do we say enough or anything about legal aspects that we should probably, it's probably implied, but.
You reference patient safety organizations, which are fundamentally a legal construct. It doesn't say it explicitly, though, so. I think what would be called for would be consistency, so that there's a standard way to respond without undue concerns that liability in one setting is radically different from liability in another setting, which would inhibit you from reporting.
Yeah. That sounds good. It looks like Stephen's typing some more things there.
Sorry, going on and off mute so as not to make you listen to my typing.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yes, I think that's perfect. And if anyone has anything else, please raise hand. Okay, let's move on to the next one. Row 17, PDMP query and reporting transactions with providers and pharmacists are not standardized. NCPDP standard 2017 includes fields that allow prescribers to report to PDMPs using the existing med history transactions that are currently integrated into e-prescribing workflows. And recommendations encourage and adopt using these and encourage development of a standard for PDMP queries and reporting.
Maybe that could be merged into the earlier one.
Yeah. So maybe someone has a little bit more insight into this. Why is the PDMP query and reporting transactions being considered separate from? Is query and reporting different from just trying to get the PDMP data? I'm trying to understand this and the one, two rows above. The one, two rows above is the ONC work is fire-based, and this one is saying use NCPDP. So
maybe call for the reconciliation.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with this NCPDP standard. So maybe what we should do is
I just want to clarify. I think this came from our discussions with SureScripts and the acknowledgement that this is working and there are standards in place. And there was a sense that, you know, moving too quickly, you know, that we want to optimize our use of existing standards. At the same time, we're also looking at new opportunities to leverage new technologies such as FHIR.
Yeah, I think that falls under probably a generic recommendation that's not only for meds and really in every area, which is we tend to have multiple sort of historical and current standards, and we also have, multiple competing approaches. And I think we want to foster sort of innovation without just sort of ignoring and unnecessarily sort of replacing existing working standards. I think that's a generic issue, right, that we have to sort of work through across all these domains. I'm not sure we have enough information, and I think in the prior sort of deliberations, I think our general consensus was, for example, for, you know, referrals with direct, et cetera, is that we don't feel like we can declare a winner and say you have to choose the source, but that there needs to be, you know, this issue of having multiple competing standards platforms just needs to be addressed. I don't know how much more we want to get into that. Why don't we move on, unless if folks have comments on this row 17 PDMP query and reporting transactions, further other than we should merge it in, and I think we can merge it in at the report writing stage with the other PDMP one. Okay, row 18, it is difficult for a patient or provider to specify that a prescription that has been sent to a particular pharmacy be transferred to another pharmacy should the provider or patient desire to have the prescription fulfilled elsewhere. The NCPDP script standard, prescription transfer transactions support this. They also support notification of the prescriber via the RX fill transaction. This is a recently finalized standard, which is mandated for use under Medicare Part D beginning January 1, 2020, and is not widely implemented at this point. And we had encouraged incentivized implementation and use. Although I'm wondering, like, do we actually need to encourage incentivize people to use this if this is going to become mandated in 2020 by Medicare, which I assume would mean it would change the industry? I'm just trying to see if,
yeah,
like,
Ken,
yeah.
Ken, this is David. I was the one, I think, who originally raised this, and I was not aware of the impending, well, I wasn't even aware of the script standard, much the less of the impending rule change for Part D. So it sounds like this one has been addressed. I would deprioritize it if it was just me.
Stephen?
Yeah, I think, David, you're I didn't remember whether it was you or somebody else, but we did, this did come up in our discussion as an important need. And then in our further discussions with the SMEs from NCPDP, we learned indeed that this was being taken care of. So perhaps we could drop it.
I suggest
yeah.
we drop it then.
Let's do that.
Okay. All right. So this one will be dropped. Let's move on to the next one. Some medications are covered under a patient's medical benefit as opposed to the pharmacy benefit. So meds covered under meds covered under the medical benefit often require a prior auth and or the documentation and submission of additional clinical data, which makes the prescription process more complex. Determination whether a given med is approved or covered under the pharmacy or the medical benefit is not standardized and is left up to the payers and PBMs. The technology standardization of these processes lag behind the benefits verification and authorization process for medications covered by pharmacy benefits. Medical benefit queries and responses typically require X12278 transactions. The medium-term solution to streamline and standardize prior auth processes may involve a combination of multiple technical standards, similar to how today's pharmacy benefits verification process blends a combination of X12 and NCPDP. Multiple initiatives have spun up around the medical benefits verification authorization use case under the auspice of X12, NCPDP, and the Da Vinci project. So recommendations are support multiple pilot approaches to the automation of prior authorization for medications and service covered under the medical benefits with the goal of standardizing and integrating these processes with other EHR workflows. Stephen, did you still have a comment?
Oh, sorry. No, I can drop my hand there, but I will just say I was the one who sort of took these discussions and turned it into this language, and that's true for a number of these. So I just want to be sure that everyone feels comfortable with both the observations and the recommendations as they're stated. This is a great chance for you guys to keep me honest.
Any comments? I think it makes sense, and it's the right level to say, hey, you know, there's a lot of ongoing work, and ONC should keep supporting these And I think it will be, you know, as evidenced by ONC's real focus on prior auth in general, right? So, and the insurance industry with DaVinci working on it.
Also, I think this is another example to David's earlier point where this applies to the medical benefit prior auth process generically, not just the medications that happen to be in the medical benefit. The other thing we might have included as a recommendation, and I'll just throw it out there, is this: the observation in item, the fact that the determination of which items fall under the medical benefit versus the pharmacy benefit is up to the payers. And it would seem that if that in itself were standardized, you know, these things fall under one category, these fall under the other category, that would streamline the processes so everyone was playing with the same set of rules. This is observation in the sort of the second sub-bullet on the observation. Do people feel that we should add a recommendation to standardize that or consider standardizing that?
Anil?
Yeah, I want to make sure I heard that right. Are you suggesting, Steve, that we standardize how payers decide what is covered under medical versus pharmacy benefit? Isn't that
yes,
a bit
that
of
is,
an overreach?
That is what I'm suggesting. Well, I don't know. That's the question.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's a interoperability problem or an informatics problem. I think if we start to get into the business models of how payers may determine certain therapies as being covered under what plan, I think that might be a little too much. That's just my perspective on that, though.
And I just think the counter to that would be that, you know, if EHR and other HIT systems are building workflows around this, at least being able to predict, you know, that, you know, if it's payer A, I have to send off by one workflow. If it's payer B, I have to send off by another workflow. You know, or service providers want to step into the fray and develop services, APIs, et cetera, to help support this. Again, having to, you know, not having certainty about which one is covered under which seems like it adds friction.
Yeah, but I would just argue that we already have a little bit of uncertainty, even if you knew what category it would be under, whether it would be covered or not covered. And so perhaps instead of figuring out whether it's consistently covered under medical or pharmacy benefit, that the transactions that lead to a pre-authorization or lead to a benefits check come back and tell the system what it's under, as opposed to trying to get the payers and the purchasers to all agree on how they're going to cover this. I think that there's only so much you can do with standardizing the way that information flows. The rest of it's going to have to be sort of business models of payers and purchasers.
And David has a comment?
Yeah, I think the simple answer might simply be to say, regardless of whether it is a medical or a pharmacy benefit, the standards dealing with prior authorization should be the same. So in other words, we're not weighing in on what should be which, but that they both should be handled with similar standards. And we've got a split now that makes it really cumbersome, right?
I would agree with that.
We should stay out of the payer business. But
maybe not necessarily the same, but like under recommendation, we can say foster an approach to both types of prior authorization that is seamless to the end user or something like that. Because there may be different data needed. Some may use a different standard, but I think as long as the methodology allows for a seamless user experience, I think it's okay, right? Like you can imagine the initial one is a call to a service that checks which of these paths I should go to, and then you make another call. There's a variety of technical potential solutions, but, Anil?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to say, was that we could use the information transactions as a way to figure that out, as opposed to having people change business models. So, yeah, good.
Okay.
What do you think of that, the language I just put in there?
Could we change similar to coordinated or something like that? Just because the information, like it very well might be like one's a, I don't know, an NCPDP query and one's a FHIR query, and I'm not sure like that means it's sufficiently similar. I guess it's a vague enough word that, but I think the main thing is that that the two approaches are coordinated, not necessarily that they're the same or similar.
Well, why couldn't they be the same? I mean, why couldn't the same message content be there despite different formats? General format, you're going to have to say the indication. I mean, there'll be maybe 50 variables or 20 variables, whatever it is. The items, I can picture how they could be parallel so that the systems that deal with them don't have to guess a lot of things that they may get to.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, there are ways to do the standard so that they could be truly a don't care, but that's not the direction they're headed right now. So, I think there's a reconciliation of different approaches that should be factored into how hard the standards are developed. Could they be consolidated?
Because there's going to be a problem anyway with the difference between FHIR and NCPDP in terms of drug delivery.
Right. And it may be the case that some prior authorizations are simple enough to be so standardized you don't need flexibility in the interaction with the clinician, but I suspect over time more and more benefits will require actual interaction with a clinician, and I'm afraid that some of the standards that are being approached today are not going to be flexible enough to deal with that. But that's a deeper concern, sorry.
I think Stephen's comment was oh, perfect, although it disappeared on my screen.
Somebody deleted it.
Who deleted it? I didn't do it.
Oh, let me see if I can go back. Oh, there it is. Maybe it was me.
There it is. Okay, I see it now. It should. Okay. So I guess specifically, I think that the way Stephen wrote it, I think captures our comments. Does anybody have any like qualms about the way it's specified now? In the interest of time, let's keep moving in. We'll always have all these are inevitably going to be, slightly reworded, et cetera, when we put it into a narrative format, I think. So we'll have another chance to review. Let's go on to the next one. This is, interestingly, we have this listed as a priority one, so we'll need to verify if that was intentional or not, but we have observation. There's not a single standardized coding system for medications. RxNorm codes are used by health systems, EHRs, and other e-prescribing systems to define the prescribable product, e.g. a brand name, a semantic brand of drug, or generic semantic clinical drug, as well as the amount or duration to be dispensed. NDC codes are used by pharmacies and PBMs to manage inventories of individual manufacturers' products. There are use cases which require translation mapping between RxNorm and NDC codes, e.g. for a consumer to query for the price of a specific prescribed medication. RxNorm code could be used to define the brand name or generic prescribable product as well as the amount or duration to be dispensed. The pharmacy or PBM would map that to a representative NDC that would be used to query the inventory and pricing info. Recommendations we have here: continue to support use of RxNorm codes to describe medications with FHIR APIs. The complex mapping between RxNorm's SBD, SCD codes and representative NDC codes should be cataloged by the NLM, working in conjunction with NDC as they do for other private code mappings like Multnom and FDB. The translation from RxNorm to specific NDC inventory, that item should be performed by the PBM or pharmacy rather than by the consumer software, as the consumer will often only have access to the RxNorm code delivered via a FHIR API. Consider incentives for pharmacies to make medication dispense information available via patient-facing API. These medications would likely be coded with NDC plus minus RxNorm. Policy levers, responsibility, continue work to catalog mapping of RxNorm to NDC. ONC remains steadfast in recommendations to adhere to FHIR plus USCGI for consumer APIs plus use of ARC norms for US Core. I believe a lot of this came from Ricky, but do folks have comment?
This seems very complicated. What's the bottom line? I mean, we had a few cases that prescriptions will be for brand names are almost always the more expensive. I mean, there are cases where you prefer the brand name, so you need to get the NDC.
No, I think
this is David. Ricky and I worked on this together. The issue was the mapping question. Well, it was the vocabulary question for FHIR APIs when consumers interact with either pharmacies or PBMs. What nomenclature should be used? That was the fundamental driving question.
Oh, so when consumers are interacting?
Right.
What you usually see is the brand name and the generic name on the label very often.
But I don't think this is just about brand and generic. This is really about the codes that are behind it and the fact that different pieces of the process, the ecosystem, utilize different codes, and there's a need for mapping between them. I think it's not about brand and generic.
Well, I'm sort of picturing. I've written generically for my whole life, and I never had any problems. So I'm having trouble. Why the NDC is important.
Maybe we can start with a little bit. I think the foundational issues, for example, if even if you just wanted to prescribe Lisinopril, 10 milligrams or something, there would be a RX norm in that case, code for it. I think that would be a SCD code that says, Lisinopril 10 milligram oral tablet or whatever, capsule. When you are trying to get to the dispensable, for example, to see what the cost would be for this medication, those systems oftentimes deal in terms of all the different NDC codes, which could be the one that has 30 pills in a pack, the one that has 60 pills in a pack, the one that is in red packaging, the one that, last month got a green streak in the packaging, and they all have different NDC codes, right?
Well, let me go back there. Have you looked at any of these web pages that give you low-cost prescriptions or all the costs? They don't mention NDC code anywhere.
No, but I think in terms of the actual transactions where, to be very explicit, for example, when we have a question about how much a medication is going to cost, the fail-safe-proof way to do it is to actually try to dispense one of those and go through a NCPDP interaction, right? And to get that, yes, this medication would cost $3.75 after insurance has been in place, and then cancel it, because that's the level at which those transactions are done. So perhaps, this recommendation is saying, for example, in those transactions, there should be a resource that translates from a publicly available resource that translates from a RX norm code down to a representative NDC code. So that's a specific proposal that's given. You can imagine there could be other approaches like, hey, PBMs, et cetera, please accept a RX norm code with a, duration, et cetera, and use that as the basis for identifying the best, the cost and what the alternatives might be.
The very real and specific use case that has come up related to this issue that surfaced this is some of the work that's going on in Karen right now, looking at real-time benefit check, where there's the interaction of the consumer and the potentially the health plan or the pharmacy. And currently, the recommendation for Argonaut for patient-centric receipt of medication data is that the RX norm code be provided. And so that's what's provided every time. Of course, in most situations, the NDC code can't be known because at that point, when you're receiving something from a list of medications in the EHR, it has not yet been dispensed. So there's no way to know that. And so the consumer might get RX norm codes from their providers, but yet when they want to interact with the ecosystem that requires NDC codes, someone has to give, and there has to be some mapping there. And so
it's trying to ease this integration of a world where consumers are interacting with both sides, which is relatively new, I think, but we're seeing use cases now where it will be required.
And Terry has his hand up next.
Well, two cautions. I'm not sure.
Sorry, Clem. Let's do, because Terry had his hand up. Let's go Terry first. Terry.
just to echo the fact that this is really about real-time benefit checking, and it's the fact that the system is so complex right now, and there's several different ways to get through it. I think this is reflected in this line item. But I think so. It's more of a system issue than a particular code. The system itself is just very confused.
Go ahead, Clem.
Well, I'm not sure that NLM can give out the NDC codes. I don't know the full details, but I think they come from the knowledge vendors and they allow NLM to use them to put things together, but I don't think they can distribute them. I'm not positive about that.
ArcNav does have mappings between ArcNorm codes and NDC codes. The issue here is that it gives every possible NDC code associated, not a representative one.
Well, the system is a mess, as you well know. And, you know, if somebody relabels another drug, it gets a new NDC code. So every pharmacy that labels their own drugs has separate NDC, CVS has its own NDC codes. It's a booming mess. And there's no central file that has them all. Most as they come are some of the First Data Bank kind of collects them from everywhere. So I worry about depending on it or building big systems on it. When if you really want to find the cheapest drug, you can find the cheapest drug. I can do it on the web today with low cost drugs.
So one suggestion. Oh, go ahead, Anil.
Yeah, I guess I'm overthinking this, but it sounds like the biggest problem is that we don't have a national repository of NDC codes, because that's the only way. And I always thought that it was under the purview of the FDA, but if there's a recall or if there's a manufacturing defect at the package level, the NDC code is the only way to track it. So why wouldn't our recommendation be that the appropriate agency, in this case FDA, actually manage a national database of NDC codes and keep it up to date? Because at least in my prior experiences, the databases that FDA would manage would be out of date very quickly. There didn't seem to be that much of a need. But now, with all the consumerism happening and what I think is a sort of a safety nightmare right now in the medication space, I think we ought to make a recommendation that there ought to be a central database that's managed and kept up to date. Therefore, when CVS or Walgreens or anyone else decides to have their own dispensing packets and create a new NDC, that there is some central, I thought it was always the FDA, but if there is some central authority that's going to do it, and then whether it's a vendor or an EHR, an EHR vendor or a third party or a consumer group, they can use this to figure it out. But there's always going to be a one-to-many from RxNorm to NDC, given that the NDCs are going to be a lot more specific about packets and dispense amounts and things like that. So I guess I'm advocating for two things. One is a central repository that is going to be leveraged by all the stakeholders. And the second is to recognize that there's never going to be a one-to-one between RxNorm and NDC.
Yeah,
at least on Baseball, I understand.
Yeah, I didn't quite realize that the FDA list wasn't complete. I guess another issue I've heard is that NDC codes oftentimes recycle. So that if that still is in fact the case, we should obviously make a recommendation that really bad terminology practice not be done. David?
Yeah, I was going to point out the conversation in the chat box in case people aren't looking to it, that NDC codes are available freely without restriction from RxMix, the API source for RxNorm codes. So that issue got clarified.
Yeah,
but I think we have sort of two separate proposals here, both of which are important. One is the notion that we should have a standard way to keep the NDC codes up to date, be that via federal agency or not. And then second is we would consider the consumer-facing APIs continue to speak in RxNorm space,
where you're talking about non-inventory based specification of medications, whereas the pharmacies, PBMs, and others, you know, of necessity have to deal with inventory, which means NDC space, so that we do need to maintain a consistent mapping between those two. It's certainly not one-to-one, but it needs to be maintained regardless. And Clem, it's an API question, not a human reading web page question.
Stephen?
Yeah, I was just, so Clem, this first bullet under the policy lever's responsibility where it calls out NLM in particular, are you objecting to that?
No, I'm not objecting to it, but I just, they can't always do what they're requested to do. So I think we should just, and I was wrong about, I still think there's some constraints about dumping them all out, but I may be completely wrong. It's just that I'm not authorized to say NLM can do it. I just want to be a little cautious that they may have other barriers or costs or limitations or some agreement with the FDA. So just, I'm just saying, I'm not saying we shouldn't do it or they shouldn't do it. So just let me retract all that.
And I think a key issue is it's not really just consumer facing, right? It's any group that has and deals with medications in an ARCS norm-based approach, because that's the level they have, should be able to interact with other systems at that level. So if you think about it, it seems very artificial when a provider or patient says, I am taking, you know, let's say, you know, this particular inhaler, Spiriva or whatever, right? And I want to find the cheapest way to get this medication this type of an inhaler. And then to have to, like, in order to communicate with another system to get that, to say, I'm going to use a system to convert it to a representative medication that can be dispensed that somebody has determined, because who knows if that representative medication is the one that's cheapest for my insurance, right? And then to start querying out, it seems like these systems, for example, that offer alternatives or costs or, you know, say what's estimated, should be able to accept the intent of, I want to order this kind of medication, and maybe be even smart enough to know that as long as it's in that drug class, it's okay to potentially switch and then to do all the magic behind that. Does that make sense?
When would the patient ever even know or type in the whole NDC code? I have trouble seeing that. It's always a class of some kind they're asking about.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But I think the way the recommendation is stated, it's basically, I think, saying, like, you know, the process should be a group to identify what a representative NDC is for a medication, and then for all the interactions around things like price checking to happen at the level of the representative NDC. And I'm questioning, should that really be the way, or should it be, in fact, that the systems take the ARCS norm code and sort of the other things like, I want to dispense, you know, 60 pills worth or whatever, and then from that, it does things like mapping, and a representative NDC may be one of the approaches. Another one may be, for example, to check every single NDC that's stocked in, you know, pharmacies in their geographic area, mail order pharmacies, and check, you know, which one comes out cheapest, for example.
Well, I'm for that.
Hi, what is Sofitel? Thank you.
Hello?
Claudia, I think you, or Cynthia, you may need to go on mute.
And I think the representative NDC code is just sort of an artifact of some limitations otherwise. It wasn't that you didn't want to say, it's just you didn't know the generics. I thought that's where that came from.
Well, they were a pre-RX norm attempt to solve this problem.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But I think what Ken said is what you're going to do. You're going to ask in some generic way, and then you might get back an NDC code, but what you're asking the world for is some category, and let the system optimize the code with that category.
Well, Clem, I think that's what I'm proposing should be done. I don't think that's what's actually done right now.
Oh, okay.
How the standards actually work.
Okay.
And the categories that were, you know, the broad ways of specifying, we think, particularly for consumer facing, should be RX norm. And the inventory managing systems have to be
prepared to deal with translations to and from with respect to those transactions where that makes sense. You know, a consumer asking for how much does this drug cost, they should be able to specify that in terms of an Rx norm, generic, semantic clinical drug, SCD, and get some choices back. And the receiving PBM would have to be able to understand the SCD code, map it to their inventory choices, and provide some information. Things, those are the use cases I think that Ricky was wrestling with. He had to drop off, so maybe we should revisit this when Ricky's back with us.
How about for this one, let's just park it a little bit and then put a comment that we'll reformulate based on this discussion. And then, of course, for review by everyone, you know, later. But I think it's really just getting around the notion of, like, we have two different worlds and terminologies discussing these, and we need effective ways to sort of bridge that gap, right? And what I'm a little bit uncomfortable is that currently these recommendations are already going out of one potential solution path, and I think it's perhaps too early to do that. I think, you know, we can point out this is a potential solution path, but I don't think we should say this must be the solution path everyone implements. So maybe we can do that. And priority-wise, it's currently labeled as both a 1 and a 2. This does seem like a fairly high issue because it is tied very closely to the other priority 1 recommendations. So things like real-time benefit checking and all that, it's highly tied to this. So I recommend we just ship this up and keep it as a 1. Okay, let's move on to the other ones. Row 20, National Library of Medicine Rx Norm API does not return Rx Norm codes for discontinued drugs, so it can create gaps in prior meds analysis. Recommendation support pulling of archived Rx Norm codes and NLM Rx Norm APIs. NLM is aware so that this would be a matter of resourcing prioritization. NLM recommended prioritize completing the work. ONC maybe provide NLM with contract to complete the work. This is probably just a generic recommendation too. Like, you know, when we say a group should do it, what that actually really means is somebody, say the government, should pay and make sure that there's sufficient funding to do it, right? Because unfunded mandates are basically, you know, not something that gets prioritized. Okay. And thanks, Rob. Rob is saying number row 20 is priority. Yeah, I'm aware they're working on it. The implication of that not being there is that if people use, say, the Rx Norm APIs, assuming that, you know, that it gives you current ones, it will do things like if you want to say, hey, I want to see, you know, which whether a patient has you know, had this condition by checking to see if they've been on these medications. As it turns out, if they were on the medication 5 years ago and 2 years ago the medication got discontinued and is no longer available on the market, your system would falsely infer that the patient has not been on a medication for that condition because, you know, if it's not on the market, it doesn't flip out now. Okay.
So, Ken, are you comfortable then leaving this as a priority 2, or did you want to move it to 1?
I think it's a priority 2 because they're aware of it. It's really just a matter of can somebody please maybe, you know, prioritize it or give it a little bit more money.
But we agreed that the one above it on row 19, that should be priority 1 and moved up.
I think so because that's a foundational issue of, like, we need to figure out how NDCs and Rx norms are going to talk to one another and where the responsibility lies. And I think currently it's assumed that the responsibility lies in the, you know, EHR and patient-facing systems to somehow make a conversion to the dispensable level for use in these transactions. And really, like, for example, an EHR or patient is not going to know what the PBM is going to know, right, of, like, you know, like which one happens to be cheapest for their insurance. And
I've moved it up then.
Okay. Okay, so let's move on to row 21. Some HCT standards required by federal programs are not publicly available. There is strong benefit in public availability of health IT standards required by federal programs, including HR certification, to ensure public review and compliance. For example, NDCP BDP standards, which support the interoperability of medication pharmacy data, should be freely available to public, including providers, pharmacists, and technology developers. It has been NCPDCP's business model for the past 20 years to allow only members access to PDMP standards. Most ANSI-accredited SDOs either charge for the standards or only allow member access. HL7 does provide some of the standards for free. When a standard is referenced in NPRMs, a display copy of the standard must be available to all the all for the purpose of commenting. Each government agency determines how the display copy will be available. The display copy is removed once the comment period closes. So the recommendation here is essentially we rely on these standards, right? So we should support public availability of the health IT standards required by EHR certification criteria. The policy lever suggested here is ONC, potentially in partnership with federal organizations such as CMS or NLM, consider paying for U.S. license to standards required by EHR certification criteria, similar to how the U.S. government currently pays for a national SNOMED CT license. To avoid perverse incentives, i.e. penalizing those standards development organizations that have already opted to make their standards openly available, support not only standards that are currently publicly available, but also those that are publicly available that are not not currently, but also that are publicly available now, especially if not doing so jeopardizes the future availability and maintenance of those standards. And just as a disclosure, I drafted this row, and I'm on an unpaid board member of HL7, which is obviously implicated in this as well. But a big picture issue is, I think, you know, standards that are only available for a limited time during, you know, commenting is, I think that's an issue, right? Because, you know, it's when you're actually using the standards that issues oftentimes come up. And then this notion of, I think these standards are really public goods and should be supported. I'll just note, for example, for HL7's perspective, when they made all their standards publicly available, it had a dramatic impact on membership and revenue that threatens future longevity and, just, you know, ability to keep the organization alive.
I think that's important because other organizations, they're one of the few that do that, and it's hurt them.
Yeah, it's a big deal. It's been a precipitous decline in membership, which, you know, means that there's a real risk that a group like HL7 might go bust and there's no organization left to maintain, these standards. Okay. So let's just make sure we get to the... Go ahead.
This is Cynthia Fisher. I'm sorry, my plane was delayed and I couldn't get on the call earlier. And so I don't know who's leading this discussion of these talking points. So I was just wondering if you could provide your name and repeat the last couple of sentences about your concern. It'd be helpful.
Yes, Cynthia. This is Ken Kamoto. So you want me to just reiterate sort of this last row's issue?
Yes, you had a concern about the data and being kept because of impact. Could you just repeat that so that you
yeah.
break in and out?
Sure. So, so I'll reiterate this one. So the notion here is that we are basically through different programs like HR certification referencing and requiring standards. A lot of them actually, except for the comment period, are not available to the public, right? So it's, you know, otherwise you basically have to pay to get access to them. And the recommendation overall is let's make sure that standards that we're requiring for people to use are actually available to the public. And also, when we do that, let's not have a perverse incentive where people who have groups that have kept their standards not available to the public are supported, whereas groups that have publicly made their standards available to the public to the detriment of their membership and ability to maintain the organization are not penalized. David, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I just want to speak in support of this recommendation, and I think we have a precedent with the funding of SNOMED to go on. This is not an unheard of thing now. The government can, in fact, fund standards development. If the government is willing to spend billions of dollars fostering interoperability through meaningful use programs and MIPS and others like that, it seems silly that they can't afford a tiny fraction to actually support the development of the standards that make it possible.
Yeah,
it's a public good. I like that.
I think we've nailed this one. Let's see if we can get through the last one before we go to public comments.
Okay. The last one is medication indication is oftentimes not captured. So this is actually directly related to what we talked about with Provenance. When captured, medication indication may be entered as free text rather than using a standardized, standard structured approach. There could be substantial value from both unstructured and structured medication include indication being available. And then this has to be balanced against the added provider burden for capturing this data. And I'd say this, we've already sort of discussed at fair length. I think we just incorporate this into the other comment we had about what's the information about a prescription that should be captured and transmitted and kept, as well as what are information that may not be currently being captured at a wide scale that should be. And we had commented earlier, this kind of thing would be perfect for like a US CDI process, because there is, I think, high value in, for example, documenting why we are prescribing the medications we're prescribing.
One thing that comes up, and I've been through this a lot over the years, is the question of whether this data should be captured using the same diagnosis code set that we use for billing, that is to say now ICD-10, or whether it should be a separate code set. I know that some HIT vendors, you know, have a whole other set of options that could be used because of the sense that providers find it difficult negotiating the ICD structure to find these. I think, like Clem, you know, for my entire 30-plus year career, I have associated every medication with an ICD diagnosis, and it hasn't been much of a burden. It's just kind of what I do. You know, I'm treating hypertension, I'm giving them hydrochlorothiazide. You know, it's pretty straightforward, and it actually facilitates real-time diagnosis-specific decision support and, you know, looking at total cost of care, et cetera, et cetera. But do we want to weigh in on whether this should be done using, you know, the diagnosis codes with which we're all familiar, or whether it should be left up to the vendor? I mean, we'd say it can be free text, which is, I totally get that. Some people, you know, there are real reasons to do free text, and I suspect Clem would argue that having that option decreases provider burden. But do we want to weigh in on the code sets and whether it should be free text or ICD, or whether we need to encourage the development of another entire standard for this data?
So just to weigh in on that, I'd never...
Sorry, Clem, David had his hands up, so let's do David, then Clem, then Anil, and maybe David, and then we need to go to public comment, and then let's go back to Anil and Clem. David?
Yeah, just to repeat, AHRQ paid for a major study of these exact questions, and Gordy Schiff ran it. I think we should not make deep recommendations without hearing from what he learned.
Agree.
Great. Let's move on to public comment, and then we'll go to Anil and Clem. Lauren?
Great. Thanks, Ken. Operator, can we open the line?
Certainly. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue, and you may press *2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thanks. I just want to do a quick check. Have any other members joined late since the start of the call? I know Cheryl and a couple others.
Yes, Cheryl did join. Thank you.
Any others?
Terry O'Malley?
Yes, Fisher did join.
Yep, I got you guys. Okay. Operator, any comments in the queue?
Yes, we have comments from the line of Katie Talento with KFT Consulting.
Thank you. Please go ahead with your comment.
I appreciate everything you're doing and really and supportive of the work that you do. I wanted to speak up now about an issue that was not discussed on this call, but that I understand you all are in the midst of considering developing recommendations on, and that is on the definition of electronic health information and if it should include pricing information as a form of complying with the definition with respect to the past, present, and future payment for for healthcare services. So I think it's really important that we include pricing information in that definition, because it's actually more important to clinical decision making than past information, like claims information, is far less important to clinical decision making by doctors and patients than future payment information that includes pricing. So if I'm going to make a decision about a certain drug or a certain cost benefit analysis as a patient, then I think it's really important that patients have access to pricing information, not just sort of list price, but negotiated price, total negotiated price, as well as out-of-pocket costs that include my deductible spend and other cost sharing, especially co-insurance and hospital admission setting. So I just hope that you all will consider that. I know that it's sort of radical. It's not what has been considered in the past, but it's very common sense. The American people support it. I know that there was a recent Harvard-Harris poll that suggested 88% of Americans would support full price transparency in this way, including over 60% that would support it even if it temporarily raised prices. So I appreciate you all considering this. I know it's off topic, but I wasn't sure I'd be able to make future meetings, and I wanted to be sure to get that comment in. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your comments. Operator, any other comments in the queue?
Not at this time.
Great.
Okay.
Maybe we can go back to the spreadsheet. And thanks for that comment, by the way. We were dealing with priority two recommendations today. What you described were actually the bulk of our priority one recommendations we've gone over the past several weeks. So it's definitely on our radar. Anil, then Clem?
Yeah, hey, so just a couple quick comments. So I, like Steve, I generally do associate diagnoses with the medications I prescribe, but a couple little caveats. One is that I think we have to start thinking about when clinicians start to do that, what does on-label, off-label prescribing mean downstream? And the second is that because medications transcend that single encounter, there's going to be a challenge when we already have problems with the problem list, if you will. What happens when we have inaccurate diagnoses that tend to flow with the medications that get done? We all know that there's inaccuracy in the record. So just two quick comments. I'm not saying we shouldn't sort of have some sort of program to require some diagnoses with certain types of medications, but perhaps we ought to be thinking about this with the unintended consequences. And also, as we think about prior authorization, there may be other ways to get at the indications for those drugs that really matter. I'll leave it at that.
Clem?
Yeah, I want to say, just to clarify, I never coded my diagnoses and prescription ever. And I think I just said the name, you know, for diabetes or for hypertension, for blood pressure, or for whatever their current complaint was, in the words I use with the patient. And if we put ICD-10 codes in there, I don't think the patients will know what they are half the time. So if you turn them into the words, ICD-11 is looking better. Just be aware of that, too. So I'm not for putting codes in, but I am for saying it.
David?
Yeah, I don't think that we should jump to the conclusion that you have to actually codify a medical disease code associated with capturing intent. There are ways to capture useful and meaningful intent without going to that level of granularity. I think that's what Gordy was studying in his AHRQ grant. What's the right level of granularity to improve safety and compliance without necessarily burdening the clinician?
Great. Okay, we're about 5 minutes to bottom of hour. Any final comments from folks before we transition to what's next? Okay. So, Stephen, should we maybe sort of discuss where we are? And you already covered it towards the top, but what's to come in the next few months?
Well, I think maybe we can ask Lauren to comment on that, or Denise. Maybe we can go back to the slide that showed the schedule that we have coming up. I think our hope is to get a draft report, and it's going to be a very rough draft, I want to assure you. So you'll see the format
and how we are, at least for probably a subset, proposing translating our spreadsheets into prose for the report. But I think if we, Lauren, can get kind of the broad structure and some chunks kind of fairly well fleshed out. I think the plan was that the team was going to get that back to me and Ken and perhaps Terry so we could work on it and then get it out to the larger task force. I would love to see us get that out for folks to be able to really chew on before our 8:28 meeting.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the plan, Stephen. And then thereafter, we would like to incorporate feedback from the full task force in time for the September 10th task force meeting, talk through any outstanding issues, and then perhaps maybe even share a draft, a final draft of the report with the full committee on the 17th. We'll have to see whether it's, you know, in a good enough place to kind of discuss openly with the group or just kind of have it in their back pocket as we're talking through the final recommendations, but that is the plan to try to finalize the first draft by September with a complete final report in the October timeframe.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. Any final comments before we close today's call?
Just one quickie. I don't know if we can pull back to the spreadsheet. I just added a bit of language while we were talking, and I wanted to see it. I was trying to capture some of what was being discussed earlier. Can you screen share, Katie? There we go. Thanks. So I just added that third or fourth bullet under observation. Patients may benefit when the indication for prescribed medications is included in the prescription label and other systems that display their medications. Did that help capture some of what people were saying?
Yes, and I see you put Anil's comment on off-label, or I think it was Anil's or David's,
yeah,
about off-label usage in the recommendations too.
Yeah, our recommendations are not very specific here in terms of what needs to be done. And I don't know whether somebody wanted to suggest, are we suggesting that EHRs and other e-prescribing and HIT systems routinely have the ability to capture and maintain medication indication in either free text and or structured fields? I mean, I think that's what we're saying, but we haven't written that down yet.
Yeah. And it may be also that we're just recommending that, for example, this becomes a supported effort in terms of moving through the USCDI process, right? Because okay. Thank you, everyone. Have a great week, and shall we close the call?
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.